In 1996, two young Sunshine Coasters, Ewan and Alyssa McPherson, fell in love with a piece of the granite belt and bought it. 11 years and three children later, they're living among vines, and that piece of the granite belt is the award-winning Symphony Hill Wines. Ewan is the managing director and Alyssa is the marketing director, and Ewan is my guest on Up Close and Personal tonight. Ewan, thank you for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, when did you start thinking that, wine might be for you?
That's my parents' fault, I'd say, really. They introduced me to so many beautiful wines that I thought it would be just a great transition in life to move from computer programming to having a crack at making some beautiful wine myself, basically.
And how does a person make that transition? There are probably a few more people in Queensland in computer programming than there are in the business you're in now. Is it an easy transition to make?
There's no connections whatsoever, really. But, it just sort of happened, really. I was feeling a bit restless. I had my own computer business, a small business in Brisbane, and that helped get a big mortgage for the winery, and off I went. So I enrolled in a degree in viticulture, and off I went. So yeah, it was just a passion, give it a go, big life change, do something completely different, and that's what happened.
So the value of the IT background was just sort of financial. It helped get you started.
Yeah, absolutely.
What had you done in the computing that did that?
Just working from home, I created some software that calculated fringe benefits tax, and PricewaterhouseCoopers marketed that around the country, and we had a joint venture. I'm not sure they knew exactly how small I was at the time, but the software went really well, and we did really well, which was great. So, and they ended up buying me out, and that all sort of happened at the stage that I was phasing out of the computer business and into the full-time wining.
So would you rather be doing what you're doing now or coming up with a new improved FBT computer program?
I think the wine, really, actually.
Yeah. Sorry, that was a bit of a soft question, wasn't it? So it's no small thing, though, to set up a winery. It's not as though you sell your computer business on Friday and on Monday you're tramping on grapes. What do you have to do to set up a winery?
Like most people getting into the wine game, I was very naive at the time, and basically you've got to have a lot of passion, which I did have and still do have, and I think you really need to ask a lot of experts, which I also did a degree in viticulture, which really helped minimize the mistakes when setting out. And in 96 we bought a cattle property out there, cleared the land, prepared the soil for 2 years, and planted the vines in 99, and off we went. So it's a viticulture and winemaking, you need to be patient, and it just takes ages and ages before you get your first bottle of wine that you can open. And and we're learning more and more each year on how to do it better and better, and the climate of the Granite Belt is just sensational, just fabulous for ultra-premium wine grape growing.
Were there any times when you thought about giving up in those early years?
Oh, there's certainly been some challenges. One of the, talking about naivety to start off with, things I've learned is that to make wine, you're really entering three different facets of industry. You've got agriculture, manufacture, and marketing. And I was an experienced computer programmer. So
so born for it, really. Then.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how did you go about selecting the piece of land? What sort of things do you look for?
What I learned at uni was to do a lot of study before buying the piece of land. What I actually did is fluked it and bought 40 acres in just the fantastic area of the Granite Belt, 1,000 metres elevation. And in doing my studies, I worked out what a wonderful piece of property this was, and then bought next door and across the road and so forth as we expanded. Because, the soils were fabulous and the climate and that extra elevation helps make cooler conditions for ripening and really helps with the quality.
So you liked it, so you just kept buying more of it.
So right.
Is there
cows weren't happy, they had to go.
Right, okay, but cows don't have to be at altitude, do they? They could be somewhere else.
No, but high altitude cows, they're amazing. And I've no idea what that means. It's okay.
They compete even more impressively at sea level when they come down, I think.
That's right.
So does the altitude give you something when it comes to the grapes?
Oh, yeah, it does. As I say, the temperature difference is the big one. With every 100 metres elevation, you cooler by about 1 degree, and it's highly significant. The biggest, most important determining factor for quality and which varieties you can grow is the temperature range that the grapes experience. more so than the soil and which way that the wind's blowing and the birds are flying and all these other romantic ideals that you hear about. It really comes down to climate. It's the number one overriding factor for determining how good your wine's going to be. So a bit cooler conditions, a bit higher up, it means that we are one of the most premium wine grape districts in the country. Our Cabernet comes off the vines a month after Clare Valley picked their Cabernet, for instance. It shows just how cool a climate we have up here. And it's interesting, we tell people down south, they think that we've got pineapples at the end of our rows rather than roses, but yeah, really cool climate, which is great.
Has the drought had a big effect on things?
It has, but in a good way for viticulture, a disastrous way for so many other people. But basically, to make great wine, you really have to stress your vines in critical periods. I could get really technical here, but between, say, fruit set and veraison, that's when you really want to stress your vines and minimise your cell division and end up with smaller grapes, concentrated flavours, and yummier wine, I think, is the technical term.
Yeah, good, good. I think that's Latin.
Yeah, it is, for yummius maximus.
The big yum. Yes. Yeah, that's good. So it's a big undertaking and was a big move to shift away from the life that you had closer to the coast. Did this have to be a dream that you and Alyssa really shared for it to be a possibility?
That would have been nice. She was more faithful than sharing the dream, I think, and loving.
So she gets even more credit for that, really.
Absolutely.
She's just going along with it.
So it's so her turn now. But she was fabulous and came out, left her friends and what she knew in Brisbane. I grew up on acreage and really wanted to go back to acreage. Particularly, we had our first child then and really wanted him to grow up on acreage and go to a small school and all the beauties and wonderful facets of living out there. So we did that, and she's grown to really love it. It only took 6 months, so it was pretty good.
Good. Well done. You've been there for a while now. Is there anything you miss about living in a city?
Yes, sushi, all the various culinary delights down here. But the restaurants on the different sort of, you know, exotic Asian dishes and so forth that you get in Brisbane. The first thing that comes to mind, I just love food and wine. So, to answer your question, food.
Well, they are a good combination, aren't they?
Yeah.
How did locals welcome you and Alyssa in Ballandine in 1996 as a pair of young out-of-towners?
Oh, we felt extremely welcome. Any small community loves it when people come along and invest in that community. That's one of the great benefits of people planting vines and building wineries, is it just brings so much into that community. Obviously, the investment of dollars to start off with, but with wine tourism going crazy, it just brings so many other consumers through, I guess, to put it bluntly. And all this sort of new activity in the district. So that sort of, whenever a new winery comes up, people go, fantastic, this is just great for the area.
So how did you come up with the name Symphony Hill? Where did that come from?
That's my wife's fault, Alyssa. In a good way.
She in a good way, yeah. So she's not here to defend herself.
But yeah, but she's listening, so I'd better say that. No, it is great. She basically had a Julie Andrews moment on top of the hills at Symphony Hill when it was just a bush block.
Have you had any of those, or is that just Alyssa's territory?
I'm not going down that path tonight.
Okay.
And, yeah, she came down from the mountain with these, shall call it Symphony Hill. Basically, you know, it was like a Walt Disney's Julie Andrews moment she had, where the hills are alive and all the nature was there. And I just thought it would be a great name for the winery. More than just music, but great wine, great food, good friends, good wine. So that sort of symphony of life sort of concept, really.
So after setting up, after planting your vines and coming up with the name and all of that, eventually the time came to taste your first vintage. How was that moment? What was that like?
Surreal. It was just and fabulous. It was like all our hopes and dreams. Our first vintage was just an absolute cracker. And it was 2002. We had a reserve Cabernet, a family reserve Shiraz of one barrel. And so that's like 275 bottles. And reserve Pinot Noir as well, and all these amazing wines. And we got the wines sent to us, the samples. They came up for us to have a try, because before they came, we didn't have the winery at that stage, so we sent the grapes to a contract winemaker, and they got the samples back, and we opened them up around the table, and we were all just, it was just this elation and this satisfaction. There was just this big sigh around the table. It was just thrilling. It was just amazing, amazing wines. And they went on to win golds and do all sorts of things. So we don't just love our own wine.
Yeah, for no it's a good start. That's a very good start to your winery's life. Have you ever had any wines where anything's gone wrong, where things haven't worked out at all the way you might have thought?
Yeah, winemaking is all about minimizing mistakes, basically. That's what you learn at uni, is to minimize mistakes. The best wine is made in the vineyard, so you've got to grow the best grapes you can. But as far as things going wrong with wines, yeah, it starts from in the vineyard. Things can go wrong. Like, we had snow in November last year, and which is all nice and pretty, but until the next day we have -5, and then the frost happens and you don't pick any Shiraz that year, for instance. So from things can go wrong at that stage through to all sorts of different areas along the way. So
how do you deal with that? Say, I can remember when that happened last year and you lost about 3/4 of your grapes.
Yes.
How does that day feel when you get a sense that it's coming, when the temperature's falling and you know it's going to be really cold? What do you do? And when it doesn't work out, how does it feel?
Our winemaker really got crushed by it, of course. He knows each vine by name and as well as much as any of the family does. Myself, personally, I'm a lot more philosophical about life, and one of the benefits of some of our charity work in visiting third world countries and raising a bit of money for those people is that you see how most of the world lives, and when things like this happen, it gives you a good perspective, I guess I'm trying to fumble out. And so when things like this happen, they're not a huge tragedy. They're, all right, it's a challenge, right, what do we do? Off we go and get into it. But it's certainly not something I want to happen again.
No, much as you'll be stoic about it, you'd prefer to avoid that kind of thing this November, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but I think it's healthy in life to have perspective when things go bad, and simply, I do love problem solving. So some of my computer programming systems analyst sort of thing comes out of me. Oh, good, a problem. Let's go for it. Maybe that's more the point.
And you've had fires as well.
Yeah, bushfire in October 2002, from memory, about 5 years ago, of course, and. Yeah, that was very surreal. It was a horrible fire. I've never experienced a bushfire before, and just the sound of the fire coming down the hill, like it's a big train coming down the hill, and there's smoke everywhere. And like 6 hours before, we're running around the house packing the car with things. Well, what are we going to save? And you come back to the house after the fire's passed, and with all these stupid items that you'd saved, it just makes no sense. But yeah, so as I say, agriculture has all sorts of challenges there in terms of weather and bushfire and. We haven't had the plagues of frogs and rivers of blood yet, but I think they're next week.
Okay, and you're ready for that,
are
you?
Oh, bring it on.
Good. Good. And, you know, maybe you could do something with the frogs that will go with the wine. Now, you mentioned third world countries or developing countries and things that you've been doing there. Maybe you could tell us a bit more about that and about a very special 2004 red that you've put out.
Yes, well, we're talking about the red wine. It's named after our daughter, Dan Ying, which is Chinese for red singing bird. And basically our little, beautiful little Chinese dolly girl we adopted from China in 2004. And we named that vintage after her. It's a blend of two red varieties, Shiraz and Cabernet Sauvignon. And 10% of all sales of that wine go to support Asian orphans. And it's just a great name for red wine as well, of course. Dan Ying with Red Singing Bird. Mm. She's 5 now, so it should be Red Screaming Bird, but it's too late to change the name. And she's a beautiful little girl. So, and again, it's a huge life experience. We've got two boys we created the old-fashioned way, but we adopted our third little girl, and she's been great. Really, just the whole family's benefited from having a bigger worldview, from having such great experiences. We love Asian cultures and food. Again, I get back to food. I'm obsessed, let's face it. And great thing to do. It's all, again, it's all my wife's fault. I mean that in a good way again. And she's the one who instigated this and brought me on board. And so I guess that was her turn, wasn't it, to have a different adventure. But I gladly followed her down that path.
Are your sons expecting to have wines named after them too? Or do they see this as a special one-off thing?
Well,
that
if
might
they're
be?
Listening tonight, they may now, thanks. But no, it hasn't come up at this stage. 11, 8 and 5. So no, not at this stage.
And have you been to India and seen some of the places that you've been involved with?
Yes, because we've got the nice easy part of raising money. There's we actually visited to some of the programs in India where some of our money goes to support, and not just our money. A lot of people donate money to this. We're just a small drop in that ocean. It's just a small group of people who felt a call to help their fellow countrymen and adopt little boys and girls off the street and bring them into their home. There's one guy, he's a pastor in the mountains of Nilgiri, and he's adopted 16 girls rather than see them die, and took them in as his daughters and raised them. We got to visit them and take photos of each girl and talk to them, and just uplifting stories. I expected to come back from India depressed at the situation of poverty But we toured some slums there and others that where people are making a huge difference, and not just for immediate difference, but affecting generations of people, giving them hope and purpose in life. It was just so uplifting. It was fabulous.
Raising money for something like that kind of work is one thing. Going there and getting involved with it is another. That's a further step. But actually going through the what must be a complicated process to adopt a child from another country, that's a different step entirely. That's when it becomes part of your life forever.
Yeah, it's a huge story, and it's hard to know where to start on that. It's a decision to adopt came from my wife when she heard a visiting preacher come to our Stanthorpe Baptist Church, who's actually part of this group that we give money to, Asian Kids in Danger. And he was telling us the story about this pastor that I just repeated before about adopting all these girls. And rather than seeing them being put down, that he actually adopted them and saved their lives. And it just moved my wife so deeply at the time. I wasn't at church that morning because I had been up all night with our second boy. And when she came home, saying, "I want to adopt and have a third," I went, "You what? I've been up all night." But I got onto the idea quite quickly.
And you're with the program now and have been for some time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a big, long road adopting from overseas. And there's a lot of things to consider. And there's things like a lot of children that are over 18 months will have attachment disorders that are very serious, and not just love will cure, but you need assistance as far as that's concerned, because they've been raised without any sort of real caring contact, and so their brains are wired differently in many cases. So yeah, there's a lot of challenges, but thank God we're there for them, and thank God they're in our lives too, because they've really added so much to our lives, that's for sure.
And how do the three kids get on together?
Beautifully. James and Hamish, which I went to, if I go to Scotland, they'll tease me senselessly because it means the same name. But anyway, my oldest is James and the second one's Hamish. They're so loving kids. They're just so forgiving and loving of Zara when she came home. I think she was head thug in the orphanage when we first got her. But she's become maturing and beautiful, and they're just so patient with us. They're fabulous kids, and they're a great role model for her to see how it is to socialise and interact.
My guest is Ewan McPherson, and we're talking about wine and life and
stuff.
A range of other things. Now, do you have a sense of what your children think of growing up surrounded by grapes and with winemaking going on around them? It's not a city kind of life, is it?
No, it isn't. But it is great, and it's great to go bushwalking and running around and up and down the vines. I like to pick the fruit when it's time and help out there. And, yeah, those sort of experiences are great. And, so it's just the reason, one of the great benefits of moving out of the country is to have that sort of life. So, yeah, it's great, and they love it.
Are there any signs that any of them, I know they're still quite young, but any signs that any of them might follow you into the business?
No, a bit early to tell on that one. No signs there that I can see. But,
Now, since occasionally people taste wine on ABC Radio, we have had the chance to taste a wine of yours tonight. This is the 2003 Reserve Shiraz, which stands out in among Queensland wines as being the first Queensland wine to win a gold medal at the Sydney Wine Show.
Yeah, that was just a huge thrill. Only our second vintage, and we were just so new at the time. It really the impact didn't have as big an impact as it should, for want of a better description. It's just a huge... It was actually the top-scoring red wine in the whole country at the Sydney Royal Wine Show as well. So it's just a huge, huge achievement.
What were you expecting going into that show? What were you hoping for?
Gold. I actually love the wine. And yes. I'm always devastated when it doesn't get a gold. But
that was my next question, is how does it feel when you know you've made a good wine, but it doesn't get the reward you think it deserves?
Well, basically... When you get gold, the judges are fantastic and they've got a great palate. And when you don't get it, then they don't know what they're talking about. Basically, it's just simple rules. So, no.
So it's very much like literary awards, then. Really, yeah, I know how that goes. Let's take a song. Let's listen to The Church and Under the Milky Way. Nick Earls here on 612 ABC Brisbane and ABC Local Radio Queensland. It's 20 to 10. I'm sitting here with Ewan McPherson, Granite Belt winemaker, and we're talking wine and a whole range of other things. Ewan, how easy is it to be a winemaker in Queensland? Sometimes I think Queenslanders are Queensland wine's worst enemies.
I think that situation is changing, if it hasn't already changed. Basically, Queenslanders are very parochial, like any other state, and it was only a matter of time before Queenslanders would realise that we have our own Hunter Valley, our own Yarra Valley, on our own doorstep here at just 2.5 hours out of Brisbane. And the wine quality out there is just sensational at the moment. Things have just come on. People have invested lots of money, which is one of the really crazy parts of getting into this game, is the huge capital investment you've got to do if you want to do it properly. And there's a number of us that have done that, and it's just showing in awards, in the quality of the wine. Some of us, like, we have releases we don't put into shows because there's just not enough volume of those particular wines. And just if you come out there and do a cellar door crawl, you can discover some amazing gems out that way. So over the next 5 years, they're just going to keep going better and better.
Yeah, I've had that experience in the Granite Belt around Ballandine, and also in the South Burnett, going around to cellar doors. And it's different to just walking into a big barn and buying a bottle off the shelf. You know, you can talk to the person who makes it, and the wines are different. They're distinctive. But we don't see, and I agree with you that that people's, a lot of people's perceptions are shifting. I know mine has shifted, but we still don't see a lot of Queensland wines, or a lot of Queensland wineries anyway, represented in liquor retail outlets.
Yeah, it certainly isn't my focus. I've been very well received with my wines in restaurants in southeast Queensland, particularly Brisbane, in over 140 restaurants, which is a lot of fun. And I still have a great thrill going and drinking my own wine at that restaurant. I never lost that thrill. And so really well received there, and very well appreciated by sommeliers and things. The big liquor barns, I haven't approached them. They're not really my branding, I guess. I don't have huge volumes. We sell out our vintages every year, and I just love being on wine lists in great restaurants. But we are in quite a few little boutique bottle shops, and I really like those shops because the owner oftentimes chooses the wines on the shelf, and they know about each wine, and they back each wine that they've got there. It's not just that they did a great deal in purchasing, it's that they know these wines. So if there's still some of those shops around, I just really enjoy going to those shops.
What has to happen for you to get your wine into a restaurant?
Well, basically... sometimes they approach me, which is fabulous, when they taste the wine somewhere else or they come across it. And other times I basically go there for dinner, love the meal and think, I would love to be on this wine list, and approach the person then. And that's always a great way because I'm basically giving them my voice of support. And if they love my wine, then they'll put on the wine as well. So it's really building a relationship with the restaurants is important. And mutual respect and working together, and especially on today with all of humanity celebrating World Egg Day, I think it's important that that happens. Sorry, I was listening to your program earlier today where you talked about...
I'm very impressed.
What is World Egg Day?
I've got no idea, but the World Almanac people will be very happy. So... Yeah, it is World Egg Day. It's many other things as well. And it's my parents' wedding anniversary. So happy anniversary, Mum and Dad. I don't think they knew they were getting married on World Egg Day.
No, well, you know, maybe they did.
Well, they're okay with eggs, but I don't think eggs are like a feature of their lives. So I could be wrong. Maybe when I'm not there, it's just eggs a go-go. I'm not sure. So when it comes to getting your wine into restaurants and things like that, is selling a skill you had to learn, or was that something you had already?
No, it was my first go at selling, but I guess I don't see it as selling. I really believe in the product. I love it. And if someone doesn't love it, I'm shocked. So, you know, I of course they're going to love it. And I guess that helps. And also with the owner walking in to the restaurant or approaching them in that regard has more impact than a salesman, I suppose. I guess I have that advantage, perhaps.
And do you see yourself continuing to operate the way you're operating now? You've said you sell out your vintages as it is.
Yeah, well, we are increasing our the tonnage that we crush each year to meet demand, as much as I can afford to, of course. And so we crush a whopping 80 tonne now. I think Barringer Blast are going to be nervous. No, it's such a small, ridiculously small tonnage.
How much do they crush, do you know?
Let's see. No, I have no idea, but
what's
huge.
What's the national crush? It's 1-point-something million tonnes, is it?
I know it's World Egg Day.
It's World Egg Day.
I don't know any of those facts, though. Sorry.
World Egg Day, and it's the day when Columbus bumped into America.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think there's a connection there.
I think somehow.
I'm not sure
why.
You
knew the planet was approximately round.
The planet was egg-shaped?
Yeah.
Something like that. No, I'm not sure. But I digress again to eggs. But, basically, we're increasing our tonnages each year. We're leasing a new vineyard and, gradually increasing production. We're planting more next spring, which is great because we love the Shiraz and Cabernet, particularly off our own vineyard and our Pinot. So, yeah, we're just crazy about wines. We've got over 40 different varieties in R&D block. We're just pretty much something wrong with us, really. But no, we love it. We're really passionate about it.
So so how's the 2007 vintage looking? You've got some of that in bottles
now? Yes, the whites are in bottle. The Sauv Blanc is, I hate mentioning another region, but shut your eyes and think of Marlborough, basically, or England, whichever gives you pleasure. but no, it's this grassy, herbal, gooseberry, passion fruit, monkey armpit. No, there's no monkey armpit. It's just a beautiful, beautiful savvy bee. The Verdello's sensational, the Pinot Gris. Oh, it's just, wonderful. But the big story is our 06 red wines have just been bottled. And they're even better than the 03 we're tasting tonight. And that won the big gold in Sydney. And we've got six different wines, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Petit Verdot, Shiraz, Pinot Noir, that are all just amazing, amazing wines. Some of them are only 600 bottles, others have got 9,000 bottles, but they're all just going to set the world on fire if we don't drink them all ourselves, that is.
Well, that sounds like the kind of passion you need to be in the business. What about the kind of branding aspects of things, the labelling, the shape of the bottles? Who makes those decisions and how do you make them?
I've got a beautiful and intelligent and exquisite marketing director, my wife, Alyssa.
Who is listening now.
Yes, I hope. and, she makes all those choices with label design. She's extremely creative and talented in that regard. So, she has a lot of fun doing labels and coming up with those designs. So we have the cutaway cello as our logo, and if you ever look at a label of Symphony Hill wines, you'll actually see a double image on the label, and there's a few images actually. One of them's a rugby league player with a big ear and a big thick neck, and there's another one's a pregnant woman. There's a few others, but none of them are intentional, and I now can't look at a cello the same because the outline actually gives you those. Anyway,
you understand that we will be breathalyzing you before you leave. That's all right, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And if you hold it upside down, the wine all comes out. No,
that'd be a tragedy. Ewan McPherson, look, thank you very much for taking the trouble to come in and join us this evening.
My pleasure.
Hope the rest of this trip to Brisbane goes well for you.
Yeah, thank you very much.